31, Wednesday, May 5th. I'd like to call to order the May 5th, 2021 meeting of the TPA Citizen Advisory Committee pursuant to the TPA Emergency Order 2021-01. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA selected this platform because it does not require the public to purchase or download any additional software or equipment to attend this meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform, that is, the participants will use to attend remotely, the public will have no discernment between difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that of someone physically attending the meeting. Instruction to join this virtual meeting, as well as other contact information for the TPA staff member to assist you, are provided in the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some members of the CAC are attending the meeting in person, committee members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely, either via webcam or telephone. Additionally, scheduled presenters and the CAC liaison will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. Staff, please call the roll at this so that we can establish a quorum.
So I just want to remind members present in person to hit the button on the base. When this is red, it means it's on. And then those that are appearing virtually, please make sure you unmute your microphones. So Terry Brown.
Here, I'm here.
Mark Bruner.
Here.
Greg Fagan.
Here.
Michael Fitzpatrick is absent. Mark Forrest. James Garvin.
Here.
Jason Mankoff.
Here.
Vijay Mishra.
Here.
Ryan Rossi.
Here.
Paul Orion. Myra Newman.
Here.
Richard Vasilotti.
Here.
Albert Richwagen. And Wendang.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
No, Madam Chair.
Are there any changes to the minutes? If not, can I have a motion to adopt the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Second.
So I have a motion by Myron and a second by Terry.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Okay. Motion carries. General public comments. I will summarize our public comments procedures for this virtual meeting. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by virtual attendees using the raise hand feature in the Zoom platform. And then lastly, verbal and or written comment may be provided by an in-person attendee. Are there any general comments received at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, moving to item 1E, comments from the chair. I'd like to welcome Mark Forrest as nominated by Mayor Pinto and Vijay Mishra as nominated by Councilman Napoleon as the newest appointed member to the CAC. Welcome. Would you like to make any comments at this time? Okay, welcome, Mark. If any other committee members has comment for the committee, please utilize the raise hand function of the Zoom platform and ask to be recognized, and then the member to unmute your microphone once you are recognized. No.
Madam Chair, this is Vijay here.
Hi.
Hi, sorry, I was a little slow in pressing the unmute button, but excited to join the group here and looking forward to making being part of this organization. Thank you.
Welcome. So at this time, we're moving to item 1F.
I got a comment.
You have a comment? I'm sorry, Jason.
Yeah. So I've been able to do some of the kind of onboarding or welcoming to the new committee members. And then I've also been able to offer in-person kind of introductions or reviews of the agendas. And I met with Myron this past for this particular amendment or for this particular meeting and agenda. And I wanted to ask Myron to maybe repeat the request for introductions for the new members and existing members. If you could just share more of that request, I'd like it more to come from you if you're more comfortable with it.
Sure. In my experience with committees, which is extensive, committees work best when committee members know each other. And so, in fact, when I was in charge of something like 225 committees for the National Academy of Sciences, we had a regular procedure that every committee, once a year, the members would take a few minutes to describe their interests, their background and interests to the other members, so that everybody could understand who everybody was and where they were coming from. I suggested to in our conversation the other day to Jason that with a number of new members on the CAC, it might be useful to do that. It's not just the new members to describe their interests, but the new members should have a benefit of the old continuing members to describe their background and interests.
I think that's great. If we can take a couple minutes to introduce ourselves. We'll start with you, Myron.
The guy who makes the suggestion has to carry the burden. My formal training is in engineering, and I've taught at a number of universities, including on the subject of urban infrastructure, which has been a long time interest of mine. I had the experience of leading a group of people to write a master plan for a section of Montgomery County, Maryland, a number of years ago, which required us to consider the urban infrastructure and the relationships between them. In the last 14 years of my career, I was the Associate Executive Officer of the National Academy of Sciences in Washington. And in that capacity, I had supervisorial responsibility for the Transportation Research Board. And there I learned a great deal about transportation, and that's why I'm interested in serving on the TPA CAC.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Ryan. At this time, is there anybody else want to introduce themselves? Raise hand functions if you're here virtually.
Madam Chair, would you prefer that I do a roll call vote?
Yeah, or maybe that'll be the easiest. So okay. You can start with Terry.
Yes.
Well, I was straining my brain to remember why I was on this committee, because I'm one of the longest serving. I think Greg Fagan is the only one that I recognize that might be on here longer. I worked for the state of Florida for 32 years, and the last half of my career was general services manager. Most of you know what that means, and it was there was a section of that responsibility on transportation for state agencies, and I served for a bit as a coordinator of transportation for clients in the state agencies. And I happened to go to one of these meetings, and Randy Whitfield was there, the old director of the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And he asked me if would I be interested in serving on this CAC board. And he somehow got a sponsor for me, who I believe was Karen Marcus at the time. So I did, that's how I got on the committee, and I retired from the state of Florida in 2006. So I've been, serving ever since as a citizen volunteer, and I'm very interested in transportation and the chokehold that roads and vehicles have on our community. I was born and raised here in Lake Worth. I don't live in Lake Worth now, but I was born in Florida. And it was sure a different place in a lot of ways, but transportation was seemed like a lot more pleasant to get around. Now it's you're taking your life into your own hands getting on I-95. At any rate, that's why I'm here as a citizen volunteer, and I have a great interest in trying to improve transportation. All right?
All right. Thank you. Mark?
Here I am now, I'm unmuted. My name is Mark Bruner. I serve as the appointed representative from the Village of Palm Springs. My background is in solid waste and environmental issues. So dealing with that part of infrastructure, as Myron talked about infrastructure earlier. Spent over 30 years at the Solid Waste Authority here in Palm Beach County. And as part of my job there, I was involved with planning for our facilities. So I dealt with traffic issues when we were siting new facilities. Also dealt with traffic issues because we have a network of solid waste transfer stations and there's a significant amount of traffic associated with those. So we dealt with those issues on a regular basis. So I've been on the CAC for, I believe, about 3 or 4 years. Retired from the Solid Waste Authority about 5 years ago. And my interests are the traffic issues, particular concern, with some of that heavy vehicle traffic, making sure that that is able to function well in the county and not interfere with other traffic. Other issues are, again, making the traffic patterns more pedestrian and bicycle friendly and achieving that good mix of traffic conditions. So that's me, and that's my position and where my issues are on the CAC.
Mark, this is Myron. When I was living in Montgomery County, Maryland, I chaired the Solid Waste Advisory Committee for that county when we built the transfer station, the cogeneration facility, and the other kinds of things that I understand the local Solid Waste Authority has been influential.
Yeah, we have, I'm still unmuted. I had to check first. Yeah, we actually, we have 5 transfer stations and we have 2 waste energy facilities now. We built the first one in the late 1980s and then the second one in the 2010s. So yeah, we spend a lot of money on the infrastructure and we try to make it run as smoothly as possible. And traffic flow and efficient traffic for us is an important issue for that. So thank you.
Great. I think, Greg, you're next.
Hello, everybody and new members. My name is Greg Fagan. I'm a lifetime resident of West Palm Beach, Florida. My mom worked right here down in the City Hall for 30 plus years. I am a civil engineer, University of Florida. I live in Palm Beach Gardens today. I became active in transportation early in my 40-year career, back when there was no transportation planning agency. There was no transportation commission. The county only had a 5-year road oversight committee that didn't have any public input whatsoever. And we floated the idea of a transportation commission on top of the MPO that just came established. So we'd have more proper representation from the cities and the public at large. So we could have a thorough, comprehensive planning agency with all cities involved, all community leaders, businesses, et cetera. So the problems could be solved. And it has evolved over the last, I don't even know how many years, 20 some odd years, to where it is today. I see that I was nominated here prior to current operating procedures. So I think it goes way back to when Jeff Koons was a county commissioner and I was put on the 5-year road oversight as part of my activities with the Business Development Board and the Economic Council of Palm Beach County. I thoroughly believe in a uniform, coordinated transportation system. I drive around this county every day, and I think it's easier to get places today than it ever has been in my life. So I think that all the transportation providers, this organization is doing a fantastic job coordinating everything. It's a tremendous amount of money, as we all see on these lists. There's a lot more money coming. We have a huge growth that's happening, especially with this COVID factor that we're all reading about. It is very real, and we need to be prepared for it. In fact, I was just driving down through downtown and remembering what it used to look like and looking at the Brightline train, the road system, the buildings and everything that's happening. And my hat's off to this organization and everybody that puts their time into make this so much better. I did serve as chair of this committee for a period of time. I can't tell you how long it was. I think, I don't know if I was the second one or the third one at this point, but it was an honor to serve as chair. I look forward to our newest chair taking the helm and leading us as we go forward. Thank you.
All right. Oh, thank you. Next person on the list here is James.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. My name is James Garvin. I'm a professional graphic designer and brand strategist. I've been self-employed in the local area for about 15 years now. I was nominated to be on this committee by the City of Palm Beach Gardens, and I'm proud to serve in that capacity. I have a great interest in urban planning, the evolution of transportation from how we've been doing things to embracing the new opportunities in the future, especially when that segues into then how to reutilize spaces that have been designated for transportation to date. So, and particularly the City of Palm Beach Gardens, I'm very interested to see how this evolution transpires. So I appreciate everybody's time and thank you for having me here.
All right, thank you. Jason.
Is that me you're talking to?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm actually going to defer till next time. I'm kind of monitoring the county board meeting. I have a matter that I'm involved in, so I don't want to lose my focus. So next meeting, I'll give my presentation.
All right, great.
Kind of watching both.
We're going to hold you to it.
Thanks.
All right. I think we heard a little bit about VJ. Would you like to add?
Thanks. Yes, basically, I also, like engineer with some of the other members, I moved to Palm Beach County 12 years ago, and I have been here since then. A previous volunteering role, I would say I was the president of American Society of Civil Engineers of Palm Beach branch. And when I heard the name Randy Whitfield, I'm like, that's someone I've worked with in the past. I really feel proud to know. Other than that, I work with South Florida Water Management District as a lead project manager, working on several projects around the state. And as I said, really excited to be part of this group.
All right, thank you so much. I have Ryan Rossi next.
Hi, everybody. Sorry, I can't get my camera working, so I apologize for that. But I'm from South County, actually. I was appointed by Mayor Scott Singer of Boca Raton, I guess about a year and a half ago. And I don't have a transportation background per se. I'm actually the executive director of the South Florida Water Coalition, which is a 501c4 that advocates for water supply protection for South Florida. However, I did run for the Florida State House back in 2018 I had a really good chance to discuss transportation related issues. And of course, that district stretches all the way from Boca up to Palm Beach Island, just north of that. So a pretty expansive territory of the county, even though it's, the majority of it's coastal. Transportation issues were very relevant. The Brightline project was just taking off at that point. Obviously, it's of great interest here in Boca now. I had talked to the mayor about that, certainly through the campaign and when the campaign was over. So I remain appreciative for him, extending the chance for me to serve on this great committee, especially as issues like train and transit continue to develop. And the South County area continues to expand the way that it has. Traffic is something that we talk about quite often down this way. I'm happy to be on the committee. Hopefully, I'll be able to join in person next week. I'm pretty sure that, all of us will look forward to getting back together, in an in-person environment, soon. That's it. Thanks.
Hey, great. And, Paula.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm Paula Ryan. Having grown up in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and my father worked for the Department of Transportation, I saw the introduction of the subway system in D.C. as it was developed. It started downtown and as it moved out to the suburbs. So I've always recognized the importance of having a good transportation system, being able to get around point A to point B, and just really appreciated it. And then as I moved on in life, I realized that not every place has it. And my profession is an affordable housing developer. I've built communities all over the country, starting in the early 90s, and from farm worker, urban, family, elderly, transportation, and being able to access where my residents need to be is critical to their success as a resident. So I've always engaged on the transportation side from the community. And then in 2015, I became a city commissioner for West Palm Beach. And as such, I was fortunate to sit on the Transportation Planning Board, which is the governing agency to this board, as well as the Treasure Coast Regional Planning, the Water Resource Management. And transportation doesn't happen in a vacuum, and being able to bring all of those elements to bear, including land use and zoning, is critical. And so I think that this is a great place to be, to hear and listen and watch what happens as the county moves forward. And I'm happy to be on this board in the capacity of a citizens advisory. So that's me, and thank you.
Thank you. We heard from you, Myron. So Richard?
Hi there. Sorry. My name is Rich Vassalotti. I'm born and raised in West Palm Beach. I've been living here for 51 years. I'm a retired firefighter from Palm Beach County Fire Rescue, where I served 30 years. I retired as a captain. And believe it or not, after 29 years of loving the job, I was awarded the 2018 Customer Service Award recipient for Palm Beach County Fire Rescue. Part of that was, I believe, a lot of my involvement in the Western communities. I was involved with a lot of many public forums where there were meetings concerning traffic issues, particularly in the Western communities dealing with the Acreage Loxahatchee area. And I've also seen firsthand the devastating effects of vehicle crashes. And I got tired of seeing this stuff, especially in the neighborhood that I live in my residential neighborhood out here in the Acreage. A survey was done, and I believe the survey ended in around 2019, but it was a five-year study that in the Acreage, there was a 71% increase in traffic accidents, or I don't like saying accidents, traffic crashes, where the rest of Palm Beach County had a 7% increase in. Something's really wrong with that. And people know that I'm working with other people and sharing my experiences of how to maybe resolve some of these issues. Some of these speaking arrangements that were going on, whether it was a high school or a public forum, I was noticed, and I was asked to be on the TPA by Commissioner McKinley. My wife's also a firefighter. She's getting ready to be promoted captain herself, and very involved with our children, particularly baseball. I coach baseball in Palm Beach Gardens, and my daughter's tennis, and I'm also on our school's student advisory council. So all my former coworkers who think I'm fishing every day, I can tell them that I am not doing that at all. But nice to meet everyone, and thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much. So a little bit about myself. Thank you so much for nominating me and accepting this nomination for me to be chair. My name is Wen. I am a transportation engineer, which, you know, my experience ranged from roadway design to traffic engineering. I was the city traffic engineer for the city of West Palm Beach until earlier this year. And then now I spend most of my time advocacy in really serving on different boards. I serve on this board, I serve on a different board with the TPA, and then lastly, I'm also a delegate for NACTO on the NCUTCD, which is the National Committee of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and really just trying to influence change in the way that the transportation has evolved over the course of so many years. So I'm very passionate about transportation in general, especially when it comes down to safety. And thank you so much for, you know, for everyone who mentioned a little bit of what their passion are. And I think we can all understand that as we grow in a positive way, and we grow in a way that is safe for everyone, especially all the vulnerable users just on the road. And that's why I'm just very, very passionate about being on this board. And I represent Boca with Ryan. At this time, we're going to move to item 1F, the CAC liaison's report. And I'd like to invite Jason to provide an update.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for that brief introduction by everybody. It was very helpful as the liaison as well to learn about each one of you. So to begin with the liaison report, the first item on this report is the Florida Local Transportation Assistance Program, or called LTAP Center webinars. So these are online webinars hosted by the FDOT, or the Florida LTAP Center. And they'll host a total of three webinars. And you see on the agenda here, there's three of them that are upcoming starting in May 6th. The first one is designing for complete streets. The next one is FHWA Emergency Relief Program Training. That starts on May 11th. And then the third one is Basic Highway Plan Reading, which starts on June 1st. And it looks like there's about two to three dates for each one of them. So it seems like there's a series for each. Feel free to go to the website floridaltap.org to get more information. The next item is Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month. So in May, this is designated the month for safety awareness for motorcycles, and you can get more information at ridesmartflorida.com/May. The next item is the National Bicycle Month. There's a couple of events listed here, the first one being Florida Love to Ride Challenge. And that happens in May to encourage others to sign up and participate. And there's a chance to win prizes. And you can sign up at lovetoride.net/Florida. And you can find the TPA as a registered participant under the small groups as well. The next is the National Bike to School Day. And while May 5th is the official National Bike to School Day, communities are welcome to celebrate any day in May that best fits their schedule. And you can find more information at walkbiketoschool.org. And the last event, the last item for this item, or for National Bike Month, is National Bike to Work Week and Day. So National Bike to Work Week is May 17th through the 23rd. And National Bike to Work Day is May 21st. And so you can find more details on this event or this program at bikeleague.org/bike month. Next is our governing board meeting for this month will be held on May 20th. at 9 a.m., both virtually and in person, here hosted by the TPA. And you can find the agenda packet and more details at palmbeachtpa.org/board. There's also a bicycle-friendly business recognition or program that recognizes employees for their efforts to encourage a more welcoming atmosphere for bicycling for their employees, their customers, and the community overall. And you can apply for, and the application window is open through June 10th, 2021. And you can go to bikeleague.org/business to get more information. The next item is walk-friendly communities. And this is municipalities are encouraged to apply for walk-friendly communities designation through June 15th, 2021. And you can get more information on walk-friendly communities at walkfriendly.org. The last item is a recurring item of high visibility enforcement funding offered by the FDOT, and it offers local enforcement agencies funding contracts for high visibility enforcement to improve bicycle and pedestrian safety. So applications are accepted on a rolling basis. And for more information, you can visit alerttodayflorida.com/HVE. That concludes the liaison report.
All right, thank you so much. Are there any public comments on this item at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any committee members that would like to comment on any of these items on the liaison report?
I have Paula followed by Myron.
Okay, Paula.
Thank you. And I love that there is a report in here about the accidents to pedestrians and bicyclists through the county. When I was on the TPA, that's when we adopted the Vision Zero, and we took the initiative to, even though we knew that we couldn't reach zero if we didn't have the aspirations, we couldn't improve either. So my question is, because this pandemic showed the shortage of bicycles to a lot of communities and families, and as with so much other, the poorer the communities, which are a lot of the urban areas, and we're doing work, communities are doing work to improve the roadway system to allow for bikes. Is there anybody in the county that is working to try and purchase and produce and provide bikes on a systematic level that would incorporate the instruction that comes with a lot of the work that the TPA does and the partnerships that we have? So, you know, there is a shortage of bikes, and if we are doing the education, if we could try to work in tandem with some organization to get bikes into these communities, I'd love to be a part of that or know where it is and participate. So thank you for that and the information.
All right, great. Thank you. Myron.
I had a question about the high visibility enforcement funding. It said the funding goes to enforcement agencies. And what are those enforcement agencies? The police departments?
Yeah, typically.
Who enforces high visibility?
So I have experience on this grant. It is a grant that comes from a local municipality. So each one of us represent our own city. Ultimately, the enforcement grant is target for pedestrian and bicyclists. And what we've done at the city of West Palm Beach is, because we have a Vision Zero policy and a strategy as part of our communications and our engagement, the program was designed to allow police officer to target these high crash corridors. And the way that the city of West Palm Beach tackled it was to give out either bookmarks or information items or bike lights or anything like that that is I guess it was very positive in a way to communicate and connect with the residents that area. We were able to obtain the grant because we have a lot of done analysis on the crash data that's there. So we know that typically crashes are happening in the afternoon, right? And then if you look at, if you ask any of your enforcement officers in the respective city, they know where the crashes are happening. They're typically on high speed county and state roads in urban communities. With that, anybody is able to apply, and you do have to work with your city and the police department. The grant that was awarded to West Palm Beach, I believe in, I'd like to say 2019, was $45,000. And that allows our police officer to really spend a lot of their overtime efforts into enforcing these areas that's not typically within their, you know, their patrol time. If you go into the website, they give you very specific instructions on how to do it. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, TPA staff, that applications are open at all time, they're rolling. So, but you just have to write the application that could help reduce the number of pedestrian bicyclist crashes within your
property. The application is made by a political jurisdiction, not by individuals.
Not by individual, but it would be by, Myron, I forgot what city you're representing.
West Palm Beach.
West Palm Beach. So you would contact Chief Adderley and work with him to put an application together. If you want to have a conversation, Myron, outside of this meeting, I'll be more than happy to help you get the application that the city did a few years ago.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions on the liaison report? No? Okay. All right. We don't have any action item this agenda, so we're going to move to information. So at this time, I'd like to invite Jason to present on the draft fiscal year 22 to 26 TIP. Oh. Good? Okay.
Okay. Well, hello again. I like to use the podium to do this presentation. I'll just give it a moment to get the presentation up and running. So, get some water before I start. So today I'm gonna introduce and present to you the draft transportation improvement program for fiscal year 2022 to 2026, and this particular document covers a 5-year time horizon that lists all of the program, all the projects that are programmed by FDOT and their work program, as well as other regional and local projects. Let's see. Okay, so just as a review for the group, the TPA's mission is to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system, and the Transportation Improvement Program focuses on the funding aspect of the TPA's mission. To start, I'd like to review the development of the Transportation Improvement Program, which begins with the TPA priority list that is approved last year in July 2020. From there, that list is provided to FDOT, which takes our list of priority projects and evaluates available funding and cost and introduces it or includes it into their draft tentative work program, which was adopted this year in January 2021. From the draft tentative work program, we take that document and then build the draft transportation improvement program that is before you today in May. And next month I'll present and provide the final TIP document for formal adoption in June 2021. After its formal adoption, we'll begin to operate under this new document that will be adopted in June and the months following. Quickly, in reviewing the layout of how the TIP is presented as a document, there's a few different categories here, and you'll see the sections in the table of contents with the TPA priority projects, which is the focus for the TPA, which is the state road modifications and the two grant programs, local initiatives and transportation alternatives. There's also some FDOT priority projects for called the CIS capacity, which is the strategic intermodal system. Next is the other projects included that include other FDOT projects and the local projects submitted by local municipalities that are included in the document, as well as the other modes of transportation that include airport, railroad, and seaport. And lastly, there's maintenance and operation of all the facilities that are built, which include the sections of major maintenance, operation and maintenance of roadways, and operation and maintenance of transit. The slides are running away from me. Okay, so in the executive summary and the full draft TIP document, you'll see that there's a number of summary tables, and this is just a guide of how to read the summary tables, indicating what some of these fields are, starting with the rank and year that the project was programmed, and moving from left to right, you'll see the FM number, which is the project ID number, followed by the location, the description, and then the total cost by fiscal year that the TIP covers, which is 2022 through 2026, and then the remaining needs to fully construct the project, followed by any notes that are relevant to the project. So now I'd like to go over one of the requests that we have of the CAC members, and that is to review and confirm the accuracy of the projects that you see in the TPA priority list, which is the state road modifications, the local initiatives, and the transportation alternatives project list, with a particular attention to the project itself, the funding, and the layout of the funding for those particular projects. And lastly, the other request is to review the FDOT and Palm Beach County projects and in your area to identify any opportunities for inclusion of, say, safety or multimodal facilities that might be able to be accommodated in the projects that are funded within the TIP as scope modifications. And if you do find any corrections or any opportunities to include these types of suggestions, then reach out to me. My contact information is on the slide here, jprice@palmbeachtpa.org. Forward that information to me, and then I could get it to the correct representative of those programs. Now, to facilitate the review of the projects, I've also included the draft transportation improvement program projects in our interactive map, which can be found at palmbeachtpa.org/map. It's right on our front page of our website. You'll find a little globe that you can click on. It'll take you to this map. And at the very top of the list in the table of contents, you'll see the draft list of projects, which is the focus here of the presentation and what will be adopted soon. But also you'll see the adopted TIP projects as the projects and the TIP that we're currently operating under. Now, when you click on a project, you'll also see this thing that popped up here, which is a dialogue box or a pop-up box with additional information once you click on one of the projects within that list. And when you click on the table of contents for the draft TIP projects, it'll identify them color-coded by year from 22 through 2026. And these are specific to construction years. So those years correspond to the year that the project is planned to be constructed. Now here is a all the total funding in the work program or in the TIP document broken out by section. And you'll see from the sections on the left, the amount of funding that's also broken down further by the funding source, which is the federal and state and local. And you can see CIS capacities, strategic intermodal system projects, which is I-95 and the Turnpike, is the majority of that make up the majority of the funding and the projects, well, and to some degree the projects, but majority of the funding. And a lot of that funding, because you see most of it is state, also includes the Turnpike revenues that they collect from the Turnpike itself. Now I'll transition and go over the TPA priority projects, starting with the state road modification projects. And the first one, the five-year target for the state road modification program is $114 million in federal and state funds. And there's upwards of $181 million programmed in this year's TIP from 2022 to 2026. Some of the highlights within this program is the State Row 80 lighting project, which is planned to be constructed in fiscal year 26. There's also the Atlantic Avenue project, which is a planned widening from Lyons to Jog Road, where there's been some additional funds added to right of way. And you see the next one is US 1. There's a plan to build transit shelters on the from Palmetto Park to North Lake Boulevard, and that's adding additional money in fiscal year 2025. And the last two here is Boca Raton and Palm Beach County. They have a number of signals that they would like to upgrade, and these projects have recently come online and are now in the TIP document with design funds in 2026. And lastly is the State Route 7 Okeechobee Boulevard to North Lake Boulevard. Construction is planned to begin in fiscal year 2022. Some projects that were not funded or were delayed this year include the Tri-Rail extension to Jupiter, and the Atlantic Avenue project from State Route 7 to Lyons Road was also delayed. And the last project that which was not funded is the Lake Worth Road corridor for transit signal prioritization. I'll now go over the local initiatives grant competitive application process or the local initiatives grant program. Has a five-year target of $100 million in federal and state funds. And you see there's approximately $79 million in funding in this draft TIP. One of the unfortunate highlights is five new projects that were awarded or incorporated into the Transportation Improvement Program were not funded this year due to insufficient funding. And that insufficient funding was due to the State Route 80 lighting project, which redirected some of those funds to facilitate that project being funded. One project that was awarded that was successful was the purchase of a new train car for Tri-Rail, which is operated by SFRTA, the South Florida Rail Transportation Agency. And they had a $2.5 million, which was used as a match to total $5 million in TRIP funds to purchase the new train car. Now, lastly, there is another project that was advanced by the town of Palm Beach in taking four of their signals, upgrading those signals and incorporating them into the Palm Beach County signal system. So There are some highlights for construction that is happening in the next year as part of this transportation improvement program. And you see the lists here. I won't go over the whole list, but you can see that there's a number of multimodal projects listed here in terms of separated bike lanes, repurposing designated bike lanes and widening sidewalks, the replacement of 40 bus stops by Palmtran, and a 10-foot shared use path on Indian Town Road. So those are just a snapshot of a few of those projects that will be coming online this year. And the one that I just mentioned, the upgrade of 4 signals in the town of Palm Beach. Yes.
Thank you. I wanted to wait to the end, but you keep talking about it. So I want to just get clear in my head about the signalization upgrades. And because I've been a part of so many conversations that are related to traffic and how the signalization of the lights throughout the county are.
Yes.
Oh.
She's just adjusting the camera.
So I was under the impression that the signalization was already uniform countywide.
It is.
But what are we doing when we're upgrading, and what does it do to the system?
Yes, I can answer that.
Great.
Thank you. When I say Palm Beach, I mean the town of Palm Beach. And so that's on the other side of the bridges. And those signals are not coordinated signals under the umbrella of Palm Beach County and their coordinated traffic signal system. So through this project, they're going to upgrade those 4 signals that are the approaches to the bridges, and then give those signals or incorporate those signals through operation and maintenance, or at least, you know, ownership to Palm Beach County. So then now those signals will be part of that overall coordinated traffic signal system operated and maintained by Palm Beach County. So it will fold those into it, which will really, you know, allow those signals to be better managed and coordinated for, say, evacuations and that type of thing, to really facilitate those signals and the raising and lowering of the bridges. So now, you know, you'll be able to manage the queues more effectively and efficiently.
Right. And I understand that, and that makes sense. That's been the big issue in West Palm Beach for years and years and years. But on this funding report, there are other communities or other areas mm-hmm. that are not in line to get this funding at this time. It's down the road to 2025 or 2026.
Yes.
So my question is, are those current systems on the Palm Beach County and they're going to be upgraded, or are we moving these that are not yet funded into the county system that will ultimately incorporate everybody?
Okay, that's a very good question. And so these Town of Palm Beach signals, these 4 signals were applied for through the local initiatives grant program a couple of years ago. And so through that grant program, these signals are moving through the process and have been requested to accelerate their construction of those projects. And they're being constructed under Palm Beach County as the local administrating agency. So this is a partnership with the Town of Palm Beach and Palm Beach County to construct and fund these particular signals. And so through the request of Town of Palm Beach to accelerate the construction of them, Palm Beach County was able to accommodate that request. And that's how these particular signals have been able to move forward a little quicker. But in addition, through this presentation, I think in a few more slides, possibly for State Road, perhaps it was a couple back. I mentioned the Palm Beach County has a number of signals as well as Boca Raton. So they have recently applied through a new program that we've developed, the State Road Modifications Program. And so they've applied through the TPA to identify specific signals throughout Palm Beach County and Boca Raton to upgrade those signals, say from the span wires that go across the intersections and upgrade them to mast arms to upgrade the infrastructure and the overall system to no longer span wires, but a safer system and a more secure system of mast arms. So this is a new program that we rolled out last year. And so since the introduction of the state road modification program, we continue to get applications from Palm Beach County to upgrade their signals, as well as others like Boca Raton that own their own system and manage their own signal system and intersections. And so those are the two primary applicants that we see, because most of the, you know, for all of Palm Beach County, those are probably the two that, you know, own their, well, Boca Raton owns their own, and Palm Beach County maintains and manages most of all of the signals throughout Palm Beach County, either on county roads and has an agreement with the state. So they are able to do improvements on the state road on behalf of FDOT. Sure.
All right. Thank you. We can continue with the presentation. You still have a few slides left.
Okay, so I covered the local initiatives and some of the grant and some of the construction projects, and now I'll cover the Transportation Alternatives Grant Program. So in this program, it's a three-year program as opposed to a five-year program with a total target of about $9 million in federal and state funds. And in this particular transportation improvement program, there's upwards of $13 million that is being funded for projects in this particular document. And the four new projects that were applied for last year are fully funded through up to construction in fiscal year 2024. And you can see them highlighted here on the slide. And those are the four listed. Now, in addition to those projects that are listed here, there's also some construction highlights to highlight that you'll see in next year under this program. And those are listed here too. There's a long list of projects. So this program is actively generating projects that will be constructed. And so these were probably, you know, these are projects that were applied a few years ago that are now coming online to be constructed. And you can see as transportation alternatives, these are all multimodal type of facilities. And you can see there's quite a few shared use paths throughout the county being constructed through this program, in addition to other facilities like separated bike lanes, mid-block crossings, and enhanced crosswalks. Now, transitioning to more of the FDOT and the mainline projects, the strategic intermodal system projects, this is just a good snapshot of the I-95 interchange projects that you can see will be coming on later on in the years in 2022, 24, and 26 for the intersections that are listed here, High Biloxi Road, Indian Town Road, North Lake Boulevard, and North Lake Boulevard and 45th Street. For I-95. The other strategic and the other mainline projects include the turnpike projects. And so the turnpike projects are all listed here, starting from the Palm Beach County line and going northward all the way to Beeline Highway. And for the most part, for all of these segments, you can see that they're planned widening going from 4 lanes to 8 lanes. And there's upwards of about $780 million that will be programmed and spent over the next 5 years on these types of widening. And it's all facilitated through the turnpike revenues that are collected. Now, briefly, this is also some other highlights and some other construction highlights that you can expect in 2022. And I'll just leave the slide up for a few seconds. There's roadway resurfacing projects, roadway capacity projects, and some bridge projects. I'm just going to take a drink really quick. And that, I believe that is the end of the presentation. And if there's any additional questions, I can take them at this time.
Are there any questions on this from committee members?
I do have a hand raised, and Madam Chair, before we take member comments, I just want to note that I don't have any members of the public with comments, but I do have Myron with his hand raised.
Okay, Myron.
Jason, at the beginning of each section of the TIP, as you described it, there were summary budget figures that were not quite clear. And I wonder if you could be more careful about that. I think one was the target for funding over the 5 years, and then the actual funding that you expect to be available over the 5 years, and those were not always the same. And sometimes it was not clear to me whether the funding was actually available for the projects that are listed. Clarify that?
Yeah, the funding that you see within fiscal year 22 through 26 is funding that is available. It's a fiscally constrained document, meaning only the funding that is available would be applied to projects within those years. Anything outside of those years is remain to be seen. And that could be there's two columns. There's the total costs of the project, and then there's the needs for the project. So the total cost indicates what that is, the total cost of the project. And then the needs may be the remaining funds that may be needed to fully construct the project. As the project moves through the TIP document, you may only see the design funds. Like, fundamentally, I guess the TIP adds what they call the new fifth year. So the projects that are just coming in online in fiscal year 2026, like say the Boca Raton and Palm Beach County signal projects that we were just discussing, they were just programmed. So they only see a little bit of funding for the design funds, where the needs will be how much funds are remaining to construct the project minus the design funds that are programmed in the TIP, which would amount to the total project cost. So those three there will be numbers that's why there are differences in the number in terms of the total project cost minus the amount of funds that are programmed in the TIP for the project, and then the remaining needed cost in the column to the right of the 2026 year.
Well, if I remember, it went by pretty fast. The opening slide for the priority projects, the first number was, I think it was a target of 114 million. And then it said in 2022 to 2026, they have 186 million. So that looked to me like there's more money available in the TIP than was the target for, and I didn't understand what the target meant, I guess.
Yeah, that's a number that I need to fine tune a little bit. I think
Can you pull that slide up?
Yes, can we please bring up the slides again?
Andrew, which slide do you want, Jason?
I think it's the first slide that
the first couple slides.
It was pretty real close to the front. I think it was the first summary slide for the TPA. Yeah, for the
I think he was trying to confirm that it seems like there's more money than there are available projects. So yeah, just that little bit of a clarification. Am I right, Myron?
Yeah, that's what it looked like to me.
Yeah. Andrew.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development. Myron, you bring up a good point. We're actually talking about it before this meeting about those numbers. So what you're seeing for the, and Margie's going to pull it up, but what you're seeing for those expected or anticipated amounts over the 5 years, that's what we sort of know should be going towards, at a minimum, those programs. And so it really varies by program what the funding source is. So when it comes to state road modifications, that first priority for the TPA, that's expected to be spent on that is state gas taxes. Our district dedicated revenue funds is the majority of that. And so why you saw such a high number higher than the anticipated revenue for state road modifications is really, there's a lot of SU funds, surface transportation funds, which really funds our local initiatives program. We're showing that as a project under state road modification. So when you look through the total cost for all the projects on our state road modifications list, I think two ones that are actually programming surface transportation funds, SU funds that would typically spend on local initiatives are being spent on one, State Road 7. And then the two, the bigger one that Jason mentioned is actually Southern Boulevard, State Road 80 lighting. So that has a big portion of SU funds, that local initiatives funds, going towards a product that we identify as a state road project. So it's really, that's where we decided to put it as the in the sections. Margie, should I click it now?
This isn't the right slide.
Yep, she'll we'll get there.
I think the next slide. And the next one. Keep going. One more. There you go.
There we go. Right. Yes, that's.
So when it says 5-year target, that 114, you're saying there's also SU funds to be added to that to make up the 181 million. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm telling you that. And then also on top of that is that number will fluctuate. Obviously we're not always going to meet that 114 or around that year to year. It goes up and down, but one is that the State Road 7 project's been delayed from previous years to this time frame. So you're going to see like a bigger bulk of projects with some pretty big expenses in the State Road modifications list. So one being State Road 7, Atlantic Avenue is coming up. And then also we just added that Southern Boulevard project that added a good amount of SU funds. And so what you see on this, and then if you compare that to what Jason mentioned about local initiatives, right here, where you're seeing around 79 million for 2022-26, it's because the remainder of the SU funds being spent on state road modification projects. So again, that's Southern Boulevard, State Road 80 lighting, and then State Road 7.
I think you're missing my point, Andy. It's not individual projects. It's this summary number up here, 5-year target and what funding is it. It seemed to me that if you have a 5-year target, it ought to match the funding in your TIP. And if you're only putting, look at this, the local initiatives, you have a 5-year target of $100 million. What does that come from if the funding required in the TIP is only $79 million? I just think that this is, you need to think more carefully about how you present this information in a summary way, because when you go to the board, it's going to be confusing.
Yes, that's good feedback.
Why would you be trying to raise $100 million in federal and state funds for local initiatives if the TIP only requires $79 million?
Right. Yes, I understand how we can provide more clarity. And that's what Jason was stating, where there's still on our summary of products, there's still the needs categories. So the actual amount still needed for a section is also inclusive of needs, which you don't see on these slides. So what that 5-year target, for example, on local initiatives here is that $100 million is really, we know that we're going to get, we should be able to allocate at least $100 million towards local initiatives, those funding sources, the surface transportation funds, which are SU, and there's one more called SA. We know that's a target that we need to see. We need to see $100 million in SU and SA funds coming to us to prioritize. And what's not clear on this screen for you is that we only prioritize $79 million towards local initiatives, and then that we prioritize the rest of that towards state road modifications. But I understand your concern about the, not being as clear as we can make it.
Yeah, it's coming out of the same pot. So for other projects too, such as the State Road 80 lighting project, right? It's a bigger project, higher demand, so it takes away from the local initiative program.
Yes, and that was the funding source we used for it.
Right. All right, Myron, do you have any other comments?
No, it's just very confusing. I mean, a normal citizen who would look at this online would be quite confused, saying there's $100 million here, but some of it goes someplace else. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think that's really good feedback. I think that maybe this is feedback to the TPA staff to either adjust it or bring clarity when it comes down to the TPA board meeting.
Yeah, because the question is, in local initiatives, in the TIP, we're budgeting for $79 million worth of expenditure. Where that money comes from is not as important to the public, to the average citizen, as how the funding is made up of different little pieces here and there. But if this presentation is being made to be seen by the public and the members of the TPA board, they're more, I think, more interested in how much money is actually being spent in these categories than what actual specific fund it's coming out of.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a question of knowing your audience, I think.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your feedback. I have a question, especially on the slide that we're here. The five new projects that's not funded due to insufficient funds, would that be automatically on the list for next cycle, or would each one of the respective agency would have to reapply?
No. Each one of the projects that were not funded last year will be prioritized in advance of the projects that are being submitted this year to receive funding before the projects that were submitted this year, since they were not funded in this cycle.
Okay, thank you. I think from my recollection, last year, there was a backlog on the year prior. So the list is growing. And it's first come, first serve. Is that how it works? Or how do you prioritize a need more than another? Would you look at it from a comprehensive scoring criterias and compare the unfunded projects with each other? Or is it we address the need from the project from 2019, 2020, then 2021? How does that work?
So each subsequent year, and there was this particular year that this happened, where the projects from last year were not funded, and so they would be in advance of this current cycle's projects. So they're funded by year of application, not independent or in conjunction with multiple years.
Right. So first come, first serve.
Funding all of the number one ranked projects and number two ranked projects from collective years that may not have been funded. It is by year.
Okay. Understood. Thank you. Does anybody else have comments?
If I can say some more, this is exactly why this is confusing to me. Because it looks from this slide is if you have $100 million coming in, $79 million is programmed, but five new projects were not funded due to insufficient funds. So that's just, looking at it for what it appears, it doesn't make sense. The point is the five projects, there's $79 million available. There were applications for more than $79 million. So five projects did not survive this pass, but will be considered next time for addition to the TIP, next version of the TIP, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's
some
for
missing
next
information
cycle
that isn't provided here, Myron, that would shed some light on what you're alluding to. So it's a five-year target of $100 million, which is $20 million per year. And so with $20 million per year, what has happened in the subsequent year, the five new projects, whatever their total amount is, we would allot $20 million per year for those projects. However, because the board directed us to reallocate some of those funds to fund a project outside of the local initiatives grant program, that took away significant amount of funds. And that's why it says remaining on SRM projects. So that state road modification project that is being referred to in that parentheses is that SR 80 lighting project, which took up to say 13 to 14 million off of the top of the 20 million that is would typically be allocated for each year within the 5-year target. And so,
yeah, so what you're really telling me, instead of remaining on SRM projects, it really should say 21 million diverted to SRM projects.
Yeah.
Like can I comment? I think sure. One of the big answer in the room that's not being stated implicitly is that, you know, the TPA governing board has a lot of, you know, input into, you know, leftover funds and priority of funds. And I'll give you an example, the 5 new projects not funded due to insufficient funds. I don't know anything about those projects or where they are, but the local initiative, they could be continuing to do work. And so therefore some P&E is done. And at the end of the year, there may be excess funds and it allows a TPA board member or TPA and the community to say, hey, look, we're still moving forward with this project. You have excess funds. We'd really like you to be, you know, to be considered in that rollover process. And so there is a target. We anticipate how much money is going to be there, and we work within the system of the application process. But at the end of the year, it's a truing up of what projects have moved forward, what's most likely to move forward, and how to plan for the next year. And so you have to think of these documents as cumulative. And when you go to the website, you know, they talked about that the stage in which this process is moving forward. That means that people who were reviewing before we got to here were involved with reviewing with what was before that. So it really is a cumulative, you know, discussion process. And when they adopt, that's the target. And then you go through this process all over again the next year. Is that?
Yeah, and that's from my understanding. And I think what's important is that these 5 new projects represents, it could be 5 different local agency that's being represented within this board. I think what we need to feel confident is that from what I'm hearing that it would take priority in the next funding cycle. It may not be 25-26, fiscal year 25-26. It could be 26-27 as the TIP is being updated for another 5 years. So I think that's important for each one of us to understand that our projects are still in the running to receive grant funding so that we can get great projects built in the community. Right. Okay. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to add? Okay. Do we don't have any public comments on this.
No, okay. Madam Chair.
And so thank you so much. I appreciate it. The next item is the draft pedestrian bicycle fatalities for January and March of 2021. It's very unfortunate that we are receiving this report, but Andrew.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make one more point in the last presentation as well. As a reminder, Jason pointed out that we do have that online TIP tool, the online maps, the palmbeachtpa.org/map. And on there, you're going to see a layer dedicated to the draft TIP. And so we were able to have everything mapped and on that. So we'd love for you all to look at that and look at if everything's described well and to review it in that way as well. And not just using the document. So hopefully that's a beneficial tool for everyone. So what I'm discussing today is another informational item, and really we'd like your feedback on this. This is one of those items that was put into our strategic plan for the TPA, and this is a draft pedestrian bicycle fatality summary. And so what we're tasked to do is really come to you all quarterly, all the committees and then the board quarterly, with really some summaries of our most vulnerable users, pedestrian bicyclists, and a summary of fatalities over the last quarter. So it may be a little bit of a time frame, a few months afterwards, after the quarter ends, to get all the data in and all the reports. But this is really what we're going to be trying to provide moving forward, at least in a quarterly time frame. And so in your backup, there is really just two pages. This is really an example. The first is a map of fatal and pedestrian bicycle crashes from January 2021 to March 2021. And on the map on the left, there's around 18 total pedestrian bicycle related fatalities. And then also in the backup was a review form. And so this review form is a simpler version of what you can get on the crash report. So it summarizes the data a little bit more concisely. And then it also includes observations and recommended actions that are put together by staff. And so what we're hoping to do in the future is to provide a map like this of the total fatal pedestrian bicycle crashes of the past quarter, and then also a one pager for each crash. And so in that review form, what we're trying to do is provide a quick summary of the police report. So right now it's a 3-page report that's not really available to the public. It has some confidential information. So what we're doing is just providing data that is available to the public in an easy to use report. And it's also going to provide the crash diagram. And then what we're going to do is work with other roadway owners, traffic signal owners, and law enforcement, and to put in more staff observations and then recommended actions for each single crash, fatal crash. And so I'm just going to go through just again what the crash form is going to look like. We're open to suggestions as well to make it easier, and if we're missing any information. It's supposed to be an easy to use report for everyone to be able to utilize and see what the concerns were at the crash and then what we could do for actions. So the first part of the report is just general information. This is actually a pretty recent fatality that happened in March of 2021. And this was around 7 o'clock up on Indiantown Road near Loxahatchee Drive. And so this one involved 3 people total. So there's a driver heading westbound and there's a 2 bicyclists crossing the roadway heading southbound. And so you can see their age, the condition, any vision impairment. So the driver had a glare heading westbound at 7:14 p.m. That was in the police report. And then there is distracted, drugs, alcohol, all have no on this, according to the police report, and then the severity of the injuries or fatality. So we had a fatality in this one, one of the bicyclists, and then also a serious injury. Next is this the crash diagram. And so I know it's hard to see on this screen, but in the backup it might be a little more easy to see. Westbound on Indiantown Road, and then we had 2 bicyclists crossing when they had the right of way, a green light for them, crossing southbound on this crosswalk, and then they were struck by the vehicle. And so the observations from this that the staff put in, vehicle 1 driver ran a red light at sunset, glare was a contributing circumstance. And then although the report says not distracted, the driver entered intersection at high speed well after a red light phase began. And so then the bottom section, the potential actions will be worked out with multiple stakeholders. But as an example, this one has TPA funds and FDOT installs high contrast yellow back plates on east-west signal heads to improve visibility at sunrise, sunset. So when drivers are heading eastbound or westbound, depending on the morning or at night, and you get that glare from the sun, providing these types of high contrast yellow black plates would improve visibility. And then lastly, maybe it's not only related to maybe engineering recommendations, but other types of recommendations as well. This one is TPA advocates and Florida legislature increases mandatory penalties for distracted driving and vehicular homicide. So this is just an example for you for a template that we're looking to go forward with. And we just wanted your feedback. Is this going to be valuable for you all to be able to understand just quickly about fatal crashes and then some of the potential actions that we can take in this sort of format? So I can answer any questions on this crash, but overall, we really like some feedback on the form as a whole. That's all I have for you.
All right, Paula.
Thanks. I think it's great. And I would just recommend that every time you produce it, that maybe you send that information to the local jurisdiction's planning agency. So anything that they might be doing to help address any of these types of conditions, just as a added eye set, added funding set, added, you know, issue. So that they're looking at it as well. If you've got a Vision Zero policy,
yeah,
not everybody is doing this kind of data analysis.
Right. I think this is really helpful. I love what the TPA has put together, especially all the online resources, the GIS database. I was looking, I'm reacting to what I've seen, right? And I think it kind of ties back to what Myron mentioned earlier about the high visibility enforcement grant. This is actually a really good opportunity because, again, you know, I can't speak for the entire county. I can only speak on my knowledge of West Palm Beach crash data. And typically, the majority of the crashes are happening in the afternoon, basically within this time frame that's there. And so I think a grant at this location would work very, very well in that scenario. The other thing that I was looking at your sheet, Andrew, is there any consideration, and I know it will be a period of time for us to incorporate bike signals into, just as far as, just signaling in general for Palm Beach County. I know that they don't have the capability, and I know that's a huge upgrade. But if these crashes continue to happen, and you can put as many signage or stop ahead sign or flashing signs, yeah, right. There needs to be. I think at one point we have to start introducing bike signal to prioritize them. And I know we're not ready for it as a region, but it might be 5 years, it might be 10 years, but other cities or other areas are already doing it.
I do have a quick question. Can I see the first half of that form again? Is that possible?
Yes, we'll bring it back up on the screen.
Thank you.
You want the first page?
Yes, the upper half.
Robin, can you go one more slide back? Maybe?
One of the things that would be interesting is that I'm assuming the condition is weather condition.
Yes.
Okay. Because that could just be made clear weather versus the work condition. Secondly, is there any ability to get an actual like photograph of the, if you're offering an improvement, saying you're going below, saying adding surrounds to the lights or whatever, is there any way to then produce a photo of current conditions to go along with the report? Because if it is a substandard condition or not up to what would mm-hmm. be adequate, being able to document it with the report when you do submit to municipality would aid in that decision making process.
Yeah, you got to answer.
Sure. I think that'd be helpful. Yes. I know we were talking about staff, and you know, we get this crash diagram and there's not really an aerial that sort of showcases anything or specific pictures related to this, but I think that would be the next step in the process for us. It would be expand, like when we do finally have those final countermeasures and actions for a specific crash, is to do that next step in the analysis and
Yeah.
Where we're going to go into actually designing things to
have. Right. And typically when there's a high crash concern, the respective agency, right, the county or the city that's out there would conduct RSA. It's a safety audit, road safety audit. And that's when you get a team of people together to really have eyes on the street to assess and make recommendations for safety. The other thing that maybe you, it will probably pique your interest is there's this thing called Ford Mobility. And what they do is Ford has data in all their vehicles that you can authorize them to determine if, and they collect all these data. So it's not only where you look at an incident where you have crashes at an intersection, there's also data where hard brakes data, and they have those that availability, not everywhere. I believe it's only in Pittsburgh at this time, but they're doing some really innovative stuff to predict what is that extra layer of safety improvements that they can make. But maybe as a board, right, maybe this is really good information, thank you, but I guess I'm interested to know, what's the next steps? How do we get some of these safety like strategy to bring back? Is it a RS? Is there additional funding that the county or each city could potentially tap into to do the RSA? Because I know the road safety audit really triggers, right, whether if it's a state or county road. For the city of West Palm Beach, they did a project with FDOT, but they did a road safety audit. And they're very minor improvements, but they're like DOT is programming these changes already. And that's what we'd like to see. So maybe that's something that we could help, push forward.
James, I'm sorry, can you turn on your microphone? Sorry. Thank you.
I'm assuming that this information is being collected and cross-referenced with whatever opportunities there is for safety improvements in the future. So, I think it's great though. It's great information to have and be able to use back to others.
All right.
I do have Myron with his hand raised.
Okay, thank you. Myron?
Yes, thank you. I do like this. I think it's a good idea. I have one question about the law and another comment to follow on the chair's comment. One was, this does not indicate whether the bicyclists were walking or riding in the crosswalk. And I don't know what the law is in Florida, but in places where I have lived, the law says bicyclists have to walk in a crosswalk at a signaled intersection. So that's something that might be included if it's in the police report, it might be included in the information about what the individuals were doing, provide additional clues about safety issues, because well, that's, somebody can perhaps clarify the law for me. The other issue, my automobile insurance company requires that I keep my cell phone with me when I'm driving. And it records quick stops. It records when I use my phone while I'm driving, and charges me more money for my automobile insurance. The automobile insurance companies are collecting a lot of information like this, and it would be really, I wonder the extent to which safety organizations are looking into the possibility of taking advantage of this information on an anonymous basis. That's just off the chart, but I am curious about the law with respect to walking or riding in crosswalks at signalized intersections.
Yeah. I don't have the answer to that.
I'm sure it's in DMV handbook.
Yeah, I
I'm not sure if our staff.
More recently, a lot of the especially changes that's coming into the MUTCD, and you've seen it locally also, is that if you have dedicated bike lanes, there's typically some kind of bike access where it directs bicyclists to
get on.
Have priority when they cross the street. Paula.
Is on this map, there are 18 figures, including a motorcycle. Is that actually that? So there were 18 bicycle and pedestrian fatalities in the 3-month period that this is, what, I'm sorry. What does the 18 symbols on this map represent?
Yes, and we can provide more clarity on that. I think our last, during attack, they mentioned maybe having a table to go along with this, a summary table. But yes, these are all, what you're seeing on the map are pedestrian and bicycle related fatalities, crashes.
In
3 months. This happens to be, when I looked at it, there was one fatality per crash on that. So right now you're seeing it, all 18 would be 18 fatalities. So correct. And that's what we have for data so far. There might be some still trickling in.
I would highly recommend that what you do with this and how you ultimately present it and continue to fine tune it is to, you know, lead in with this, you know, in every one of your meetings, because, you know, the whole point of adopting the Vision Zero, and we have cities and, you know, elected officials have had long conversations about this, adopting a Vision Zero, and it was never a program that provided any funding, but the idea was to draw attention, education, and awareness. And for 13 fatalities in a 3-month period in Palm Beach County, you know, we should be, as a community, looking to solve some of these problems sooner rather than later. And maybe we can identify funding to help with all the different strategies, but that's stunning.
Yeah, the number is really glaring. Florida continues to be on like the most dangerous for pedestrian bicyclists. How many years in a row now? Andrew, I'm very curious to, if you filter these fatalities in comparison to the city or the respective city or that it's in, or the you know, road jurisdiction in general. And I wonder if, for example, I'm looking at it, I know West Palm Beach has a Vision Zero policy, and I, you know, I'm looking at it from, was that Southern Boulevard or Okeechobee? There's a crash out west, right? But I know that the three highest crash rates in West Palm Beach is North Broadway, 45th Street, and west of Okeechobee. So, and it seems like that maybe we still need to do more work west of Okeechobee. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is these fatalities that happens, does it reflect the city that has a Vision Zero policy? Does it help, right? And how, if we can compare that to prior to the Vision Zero policy, like, are we making progress like Paula suggested? And maybe this is the motivation that we can get other cities into adopting this policy and be consistent with the TPA. Yeah, no, this is really good information. Thank you.
I think it's really, really is good information. And maybe on the summary sheet, in addition to location, you might put in a jurisdiction so that we would know whether this is in the county or in the, or the city or which jurisdiction. And then the jurisdictions, then we would have some sense of what the jurisdictions are doing over time. I don't know whether West, I'm not familiar with that particular location, but I know the jurisdictions.
Yeah.
And there's a field in the crash report as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I see, you know, I see Boca on the map. So maybe there's something that we could do. I don't have any other questions. Do we have any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair. And I don't have any virtual hands raised.
Okay, perfect. All right, great thing. Thank you so much. There are no staff presentations at this time. So are there any public comments on administrative items?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, are there any committee comments on administrative items? Okay, seeing none, thank you so much. Our next CAC meeting is scheduled for June 2nd. Thank you for your patience with us as we conduct the committee meeting today. At this time, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.
Thank you.